Dr. Samyan. Thank you for listening. And to Noam Chomsky, on behalf of many, with appreciation, gratitude, and love, wishing you a very happy 95th birthday.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Once a Braided River on Tuesday, December 5th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at St. John's Twin Cinemas in Portland. Once a Braided River is a documentary film screening that tells the story of the Willamette River before it was transformed into a Superfund site. The documentary features community groups and activists working to replace the zone and explores their vision to reclaim this stretch of river as a place where people and wildlife can thrive. Again, that's Once a Braided River on Tuesday, December 5th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the St. John's Twin Cinemas, 8704 North Lombard Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're in the middle of our end-of-year campaign. Help us meet our $75,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's different hues of independent programming are only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon, 97214. Help shine some light on our radio community by donating now.
Well, yes, this is Rocker T passing through. You know, when I'm in Portland, checking for 90.7 KBOO, for real. This is the One Love Jam Down with a DJ like Ja Will, for real. Now my selector.
I'm recording, my buddy, this is for you.
You're listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast on KBOO Portland.
You are listening to Tin Can Phone on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to the Tin Can Phone Podcast.
3 years in, three seasons in, I ain't talking that time. We was stuck in the pen, all the work they kept, all the work put in. Got it out the mud, see the dirt in our hands. Pretty boy Poots had a dope ass plan. The recorder came in when Mike came in, so 10 can't phone with contraband. Now you not, but still convicted. Damn, they did our brother wrong. 12 on the yard and he walked that off. Now Jaja's when he walk it out. KBOO packed like my cousin house, but we ain't throwing hands, we talking it out. Bring your own blanket, we at grandma's house. It's Mike, it's Joe, it's Poots, it's me. We was out there yelling, free BG. It's Mike, it's Blue, it's Misfit Queens. Buddy in the cut, that's perfect scene. 10 can't phone, that's something to see. I didn't do it, so I preach in the street, still praising the hood. Like I didn't lose Queen Moon, Ben, and Billy too. When it comes to this life shit, but I'm cool. So every picture I'm throwing up twos.
Hey, Cam Fong, this your boy Misfit Adi, huh? And we got part two. Ooh, we got part two. I swear this is gonna be a good one. Hey, we got my boy. Hey, photo shoot fresh. Hey, Blue, what's happening?
What's up, Queez, man? It's good to be here. It's good to see you, as always, and have a guest here. And I'm doing all right. It feels like the world is in some turmoil, and most of the people I know are kind of going through some struggles. I feel the same. But keep on rolling. Keep on sharing our experience and see if we can have Tin Can Phone go out there and affect some change and add something positive. So let's do it. Mike, how you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing okay. I think it's an interesting, we always kind of check in, and okay is probably the best I could say. I don't feel overly great, but as you said, you know, this is a great platform for us and kind of is a place in which we can do things that might help us or others kind of feel good. And yeah, Tin Can Phone's also kind of like working on a project, a big project right now, mapping the pipeline. So that's going to be exciting. And then also interesting in our kind of very contemporary recording schedule, just this past Friday. So when you're hearing this on KBOO, you can look it up. But the mother of Derek Clark is pursuing a lawsuit against the county, Clackamas County, for shooting her son. And so, yeah, just something for folks to kind of, that's going on right now and will be going on probably for some time, but important for you to keep checking it out. And now we can get into this episode. We've got Laverne, who's the grandmother of our beloved collaborator and founder, Armon. Laverne, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, you know, it's interesting. Maybe this is the best place to start. You kind of briefly met the other guys right before this recording, but I'm curious, because you have a lot of curiosities, what are some of your questions for us?
What questions for you? Well, I've asked you a lot of the questions I've gotten.
Sure.
I just hadn't expected to have the questions.
Well, and you can, I thought it was maybe an easy way to start, but maybe Queez, I know you're really good with questions.
And
this is the first time you're meeting Queez, because you met Blue at Armon's service and yes. We met at Armon's service. And for the context of the listener, you heard in prior episodes, but it was really almost a surprising blessing that I got to find out about service the day before it happened, which was quite some time after Armon's original passing. So all of that was lucky in a way, because otherwise I would have been estranged from the family. So was able to meet Laverne at Armon's service, and Blue also met Laverne when I had stepped away to take care of something before the burial. But it's great that we were able to meet and connect and exchange information. And so we were able to touch base for about 2 hours. So you did get a lot of questions answered, but in a way, I think maybe Queez knows Armon in some ways better or different than I have, so.
Probably different.
Well, I feel like this is serendipitous.
Yeah.
That our meeting at Armon's funeral, and I may be teary-eyed in many times in talking today. First time to be doing this type of thing for me. Mm-hmm. And that I've always felt, of course, he's my only grandson, and I loved him dearly. And not only was he my grandson, he was my friend. And that we were friends. And I've walked with him from birth to death. And I've always felt that he has been here on earth for some reason. And I have felt that in talking with you guys, particularly Michael and Blue, that there is a connection here for not only honoring him, but also for carrying on the legacy that he really wanted to see in life. His legacy of his kindness and loving for people, his very strong love of diversity. I think that was a great thing that he had, and that he taught me a lot about diversity. And also all the things that add up to why how important it is for us to really look as people, as a nation, as individuals, at what the addiction process and how that impacts each of us as individuals and as a society. And I'm much concerned now, particularly as a society, of how we integrate, how we spend our money, how we use our resources. And I'm saddened that I don't see the resources going into the area to build up our country by building up our youth and our young people. So this is why I am wanting to be a part of this in any way that I can. I've not been an active activist in my life. That has not been something that I felt I had skills for, but I am an encourager. And that's the area to encourage people to be the best they can be. With that said, I'll let you ask some questions.
Well, even just to respond, I think that as you kind of shared your story and you said, I'm not an activist, but you're on this platform and I guess, you know, today's your debut, because, you know, just by being a voice, you know, some of even the original platform of this project is that people don't want to associate with folks who have post-carceral or conviction or challenging or complicated lives. And so, you know, in a way, you're the prime demographic of people who tend to avoid.
That's right.
You know, not that obviously you're not, but by being here, you are adding your voice to the collection of voices that is this platform. And I think, again, this is in some ways a starting point, but it's just really fascinating because folks of all different kinds listen to KBOO. It may be that people are hearing your voice and maybe for the first time seeing themselves in how they try to understand or navigate this. So, yeah, thanks for joining. Seemed like, Queez, you were on the cusp.
I mean, I'm just like, again, just like, man, I guess having Miss Laverne here, I just keep looking at her and I'm just like, man, my brother. But I'm thinking, like, was he always funny as a kid? Like, was he always a jokester when he was young? Or is that something that he developed?
Oh, he was, pretty much. He was an active kid. He was a joker. He was, at one time, he met my brother-in-law, and he was maybe 10 years old. And my brother-in-law says, oh, he can carry on a conversation with anybody about anything. And yes, yeah. He could. And he did. He seemed to have a sense of knowing who he was communicating with. And it didn't make any difference who it was, who he communicated with. He saw them as who they were. He saw I feel like he saw through them to know a little bit about their soul, who they are. And not always. And he had his great points and he had his points that weren't so great.
Armand had a lot of empathy, though. Armand was great at putting himself in the people he was talking to, like putting himself in their shoes. Yes. That's why Armand was good with interviewing, because he had the ability to really feel or share the feelings you expressed that you feel. And his questionnaire after that was great because he was living in that with you. And that's like you saying he had the ability to talk to anybody. Being that young, that's one of the things that's highlighted in his highlight reel of life is his ability. That's how Tin Can Phone was created, was his thought of just great American stories. Just let me hear all these people's stories. So just to hear, like, this is who you would, like, you really was doing what you were supposed to do with your talent that you was blessed with, you know? So, like, that bring me joy, though, because, you know, it's crazy. Like, yesterday or the day before yesterday, I just was sitting here in my little shop and I just was like, damn, I really wanted to call bruh and just tell him about some of the good things that's going on with Trauma Almost One. And it kind of actually hit me, because you can stay busy a lot and not really engage in the things that's really going on in life and reality. But like, that's where me and Armand really, like, I think that was our tie. That was our tie, because he had his fast food trucks in Portland and what I had going on, like, we always was made sure we conversated and stayed in support. And he played educator, because that's what he did. He'll always let us know, digital communication. I took digital because this is what I do, you know? So, but like, he played educator, and I just really, yesterday was a little bit tougher because it was one of them days I would have tapped in with him and we would have just been on the phone for a minute talking about business and stuff like that. But I asked, is there any curiosities that you may have as far as like his time spent? Because I was with him on the unit prior to coming home. I was with him when we came home. Anything that you may have been worried about or anything that you may have been curious about, whether his time home or maybe just his times when you couldn't keep up with him and you know, you probably didn't know what he was doing type stuff. Any curiosities that we make could clear up for you?
Well, I think I know him pretty well. There was, I don't think I realized up until more recently how his use of addiction to alcohol, that I was quite evident from early on, and his use of marijuana. But I never knew the extent until more recently of the drug issues. I was kind of always in the loop in some way or another, because he was very honest with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was quite as honest with me with how much his need for the drugs were. But other than that, and he didn't want to hurt me in any way.
Yeah.
But yet he was very truthful with me. If I asked him something, he usually gave me an honest answer. Not always, I'm sure, but so, and I went through the pain with him. I went through much pain with him. And he lived in my home during, right, before and after he was in
Granny's basement. Granny's basement.
And so I knew a lot about what was going on. I knew about this project. In fact, I kind of had forgotten a little bit about it. I kept asking about it after he went out, and he was kind of vague about it. So I didn't, because I was really excited for him because I thought it was a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it was a way of using his skills and who he was. And so I don't know if that sort of answers some of the questions about that. I went through pain, I went through seeing me having him having seizures, the kinds of things that many mothers, fathers, sisters, grandparents see with their children or with their loved ones, whoever it is. And I'm not alone in that. And I know that. And, I can empathize. And so if any of the listeners out there know, it's tough. It's really hard. For me, my faith has been what has kept me in being able to walk each day and have come to believe that one lives one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you don't put your head in the sand. You do live one day at a time and do the best that you can.
I'm really glad to hear that he had you to kind of check in and be real with, even if it wasn't about every single aspect or memory of his life. I mean, who has that, right?
right.
But I think it's good to know that he had that. I think when you were talking about the system and the struggles with getting help for people who have addiction issues and feeling like that's a direction, I totally agree. And I think about myself, we know a lot of people who have gotten out and passed away, and from a lot of different reasons. Drug addiction has been a part of many of the people's issues that I've known, but not everybody. And I think what's separating me, that was my first thought, is what's separating me from that same end? And I don't have a drug addiction issue, but I still have all these pressures that we as post-carceral humans can feel. And I think that those relationships and struggles and how we are with family and how we are with friends and how we are in business, the fact that Armand didn't feel like he could maybe share about everything about himself within his professional life or various things, how did that affect how he was able to fully be him, and feel good and then, go down this path? So, and then I share one other thing is maybe as a topic of discussion is just to think that was hearing people and listening to people and engaging with people was this feature of Armand, that's how I always felt when I was talking to him. I always liked talking. He was always a great guy. And even when he was struggling, he cared about other people, even when he was struggling, he wanted to hear how you were doing and what's going on and cut it up a little. And I think it made me think about what are we supposed to do? Because sometimes I think, man, there's so many pressures in life. It would be really nice just to do some, warehouse job where I'm just doing something simple and remedial and over. And then I think when you guys were talking, it's but is that what I'm supposed to do? Armand to the end, even though he wasn't always able to show up at Tin Can Phone, was a catalyst for this happening, for this starting and for this continuing in a way. And it's part of what he was meant to do. So I think it's kind of a cool lesson for us to think about.
Yeah, it is interesting. He was just so good on the show, at all times, even in not the best of times. But, he had really great insights and would really push the ideas. And it was interesting kind of that early detail you shared about he could talk to anyone, as Quiz mentioned, when we were inside, he had such a kind of a divine focus on this idea, and he was really excited about it. I mean, I think he attributes me to giving the idea, it was his idea, but I just kind of made it possible. And the belief in it is kind of what really took him he took it seriously. I think it remains a curious paradigm, you know, that a lot of guys actually do well inside because they are not distracted by the different pressures on the outside and, you know, learn to navigate the pressures on the inside. And so folks, especially who like substance is a part of the thing that they're grappling with, it kind of creates this environment where that's less of an option and it allows folks to really focus. And so Armand was very focused on this project to different facets, such that again, it became what it is today, because even when he got out, was really kind of passionate about doing it. And it wasn't until there was like concern about what it might mean for his professional life that, you know, a different choice was made. But remains further interesting to hear about kind of the origins of his character, because yeah, he was, I think we wouldn't be doing it or thinking about it if it wasn't for his natural talent as an orator and interviewer. And the idea of, I mean, because the project Great American Stories was isolated, and it was so potent as an isolated thing that it became Tin Can Phone, that now is this really fascinating platform that we're able to share with others. And hopefully, per even your own bid for activism interests, you know, push further and push against legislation and legal process, or push for and advocate for centers and resources for folks who, you know, the statistics on people who go to prison for nonviolent crimes, especially, you know, when they get out, there's not enough support to kind of help them navigate the challenges that caused them to wind up in prison. But it's like funny because politically, Armand's perspective has always been like, you can't get rid of prisons because, you know, there's got to be somewhere for those folks to go. So it's all quite interesting. But again, here we are continuing to like embolden Armand's podcast legacy. And I like kind of chuckled because I remember when he had his own podcast and he had this funny but cheesy like intro that was like, "Poos, poos, poos podcast." And it was like, so the bravado was extreme. But so, you know, I don't know where that project went, but this project, even without his active participation, continues to grow and thrive. So yeah, it's really interesting and exciting to hear that those kernels of intention are from it at Armand's earliest disposition.
Yes, I think you are correct on that.
It's interesting too. I mean, I don't know if I guess Blue was there, but it was before you were like on the show, so to speak. But does anyone remember Joe's grandma was like I was trying to think, I think like, you know, at least this season, but maybe all of last season, we've never had a guest who wasn't navigating post-carceral life themselves. But Joe's grandmother was on the show on our first episode and asked, yeah, this really interesting question. I mean, it was clear, and in maybe ways she was like less equipped than it sounds like you are feeling, you know, resourced in certain ways. But she just, you could hear the desperation of like, what do you do? How do you hold this experience? And her son was, or I guess, you know, her grandson was out, but she just didn't know how to be a supportive entity in his life with what all he had navigated. So yeah, thanks for being here with us.
That's very true. I can identify with that, because even myself, who had knowledge and worked in the medical field and the social field, even I couldn't even navigate the issues. And I had a lot of knowledge to be able to do that. And I had difficulty assisting Armand in getting through the hoops that he needed to get through. And how frustrated I was that I couldn't, when he really got out and needed the things that they said he needed, and then not being able to find the resources. And it was very, very painful for me to say my peers, the people who say they want to give people help, really, really were not there. They really weren't. The resources that they say, we've got this resource, we've got that resources, but when you really come to use them, there's always a blank wall as to whether you can get into them. And It is a very, very frustrating process. And I think, how I knew I would say to myself, how bad was this for other people who had no knowledge? I at least had some knowledge on how to at least try to enter the systems. Mm-hmm. And the people who didn't even have that, you know, I would get very emotional, very frustrated, and want to shake the systems up. So that's kind of where I oftentimes came in this whole process. And I know I'm only a small portion of people that happens to. And it's not only, it's all the resources. It's the resources of housing. It's the resources of a job market. It's resources of healthcare, mental health care. It's like everything in life. Every little bit of life impinges on this. And so I appreciate and I understand and I feel all this pain that other people have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant. When you said even I, and it's like, I can definitely relate to that idea. And just to know that you were willing to walk with him and like help for me so many times, whether it's been just like checking in with Michael or having support. If you haven't done your taxes in 3 years or 10 years or 20 years and you have to do them all of a sudden, Quee's probably doesn't know about that. No, I'm just kidding. Taxes. But it's hard. Things are hard. And just like you said, every different hoop that has to be jumped through. When I got out, all I could get was a savings account.
Yeah.
They wouldn't give me a checking account. And without a checking account, you can't do, you can't get a debit card. You can't do anything. Right. And I didn't know that. It was a different world from when I went in. And I take people now sometimes who have been on the inside, and we go and we get their bank account going, because I know that that was something that I struggled with. I have a college education. I did graduate school. I'm computer literate, and it's still hard.
That's still hard.
That's the underlying message for me when you were talking. It's like, you may not have known how to do everything, but the fact that you were there to be like, I'm with you, or I'm ready to help, that's a lot of times, because two minds getting together, you get it done, right? But when you're trying to do that all on your own, it can feel like you're on an island, like, and you're trying to navigate some really difficult, you know, systemic sort of things. So I'm just glad you're there. And I just want people on the outside who are listening to this to know it's like, it could make all the difference for you just to show up, you know, whether it's showing to eat a meal or to help with, you know, some task that may be difficult, even using a smartphone. You know, people may not have used a smartphone in their life, you know, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting too, like, yeah, how important and supportive just someone can be, like, you know. So again, for listeners, I mean, this has come up a lot, but it's always good to double down. I mean, I think that there are, which it gets to the next question I'm thinking, but like, there are these systemic issues that, you know, as much as we are like actively organizing around them, they need some pretty tactical levels of approach. And so it's a pretty big project, you know, and people, and this has been mentioned many times before, when they mention, oh, I got the radio show, or I'm doing this, that, and the other, they're like, wow, I can't believe it. And, you know, even on the show, that sentiment comes up, and I'm like, look, I'm a person, and I started going inside and happened to become a podcast and other stuff. But in some ways, it became a podcast because of Armand's interest and my willingness. And I have some experience, but I think there's people with all different kinds of experience that could be beneficial to folks who are navigating this experience. And it could be anyone, but that the value of someone or anyone kind of contributing time and energy. But I was going to ask, like, yeah, what systemic shifts, Laverne, do you think would make a difference in the different kind of things that are now people are, I mean, you are an example, but different folks are struggling in different ways. Yeah, what do you think might make a difference?
Well, it depends on everybody's situation, you know, really. I mean, you could say the things that I found I had difficulty in is that the courts and what the courts deemed was necessary to rehabilitate and said, okay, this is what you need to do, you couldn't navigate it. So the systems are saying, okay, we've got this here for you. We've got all these, okay, you get the courts that give you all the kinds of things that you're to do, and yet the resources to do them are not adequate, or they're not there, you know, or to, for them to get into. And I guess another bias is that, and I don't know how one deals with this exactly, but, well, I think it goes back to a lot of life. There are a lot of, I don't like to use this word, but I can't think of a better word, is prejudice, biases that mm-hmm. are out there, that you may have a system, but you also have a system of so much biases that are there that prevent from moving forward. It's so subtle that I don't even know that there's an answer of any kind. It's a subtle thing. It's just a lot of biases and prejudice and things. And because we're a country of diversity, and yet we also are a country that has been insular. So it's kind of, we have that push-pull between the push-pull. So it's like, it's so complex, and I don't know where does one begin. Usually one begins with something, a tiny little step. But there are so many different places in what we're talking about that needs tiny little steps. And I guess it's just individuals seeing their role as a person in society, what they need to do for not only themselves, but for their fellow man. And I know those are all idealistic kinds of words, but they really, you have to get to the bulk of it. So I guess something like what you're doing right now and what many other people are doing in other different avenues is that you just keep doing it. You will see results. You may not see results like you really want, but you'll see results somewhere down the line. And it may not be the exact same result. It may not be the result of helping the felon, but it may be the result of helping the addict, or it just may be the result of somebody saying, oh, I need to pay attention. This is something I need to really look at. So it can move any of us in any way. So, and I guess why I'm so kind of out about this is that I'm just feeling for our country losing so many young people to drug activities and the lack of value of the human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ms. Laverne, I'm so glad you spoke on that, because this is something that I speak heavily on. It's not a broken system you're dealing with. It was built this way, right?
Yeah.
But it's historically, prison has historically hidden behind rehabilitation. Rehabilitation has been the thing that prisons press to the worldwide media, unknowing or uneducated folk that just sees the news or see the media that's being presented to them, and then they believe it. And from interviewing professors on the inside, from interviewing students, from interviewing real like natives, there's people who don't even know there's a prison in Portland, like right in the same exact city they live in, right? So like they hide behind rehabilitation. The prison system is like a one shoe fit all. Everybody's addiction is not the same. Everybody's mental wiring isn't the same. Everybody's mental health isn't the same. But in the prison system, it's like, oh, you was on drugs, take this class. Oh, you was on drugs, this the program. And it's literally the same program with the same counselors for every single addiction, every single, you get, and yes, these counselors may be good. And then on top of this, Ms. Laverne, they let me out early on a drug program when I didn't even have a drug case. It was just to get room in the prison. I mean, granted, yes, it worked for me. Let me go home. But just to see how in the system, they would write off anything. They told me to say I had a severe weed addiction, because that was the lowest thing that they could use to get me out into this program. It worked for me, though, as far as getting me home, housing, subsidy housing. It worked for me. But what I'm saying is, it was clear I didn't have a drug problem. I don't have a drug case, never had a drug case, never had a dirty urine test on the inside. But they, for to make space and for the politic of it, and pretty much, yeah, the politics behind it, they was pushing me out of there so that they could get somebody that was going to be long-term or something else. But it also showed, like, even coming home and going through the programs, a lot of the stuff was like, man, it was so much identical to the school to prison pipeline, because I went down that pipeline also. And when I say that, when I was in school, I never did homework. I never did. I was one of the bad kids that was acting out, right? And I remember wondering every year how I passed. Like, how am I in the next grade, bro? Like, I did school. I barely was going. Like, how am I in the next grade? It didn't matter to the school system. They knew, like, I didn't get special attention. You know, there are certain things where when you are a representation of a school, when it comes to grades and the scores, and they're going to put certain students that's going to get a little bit more attention, right? Even all of us, they throw us in a bunch and say, these are the bad kids, put them in the class, they all going to fail anyway, whatever. They wait till we get to 18 years old, and 9 times out of 10, we hit the prison system. It's the school-to-prison pipeline. It's a trained system. Well, going through the drug program, it felt similar. It was just like, show up to these classes. You really didn't have to do the work. You really didn't have to show no real effort. Man, I hate to say it, but the UA part of it was the counselors really didn't care. They really didn't watch as if when I went to take a UA, like, they supposed to be in there with you, like, making sure he was, like, just talking and zoned off doing what he was doing. But it just, it wasn't like, they don't really care, Miss Laverne, is what I'm trying to say. It's a capitalistic thing. It's job security. They don't want us to get clean. They don't want us to get clean, because then there would be no need for their counselors. There would be no PVs. There would be no revokes. Because a lot of the things that a lot of these guys are going back to prison on, dirty UAs. They get a UA is a urinary test that they test for the drugs. And a lot of guys who they call repeat offenders, the monsters that keep going back, a lot of these guys never been convicted of violent crimes, and they mostly have dirty UAs, 3, 4, 5 of them, and then their PO violates them. Well, with the system, it's an easy check. They're going to put them on transport all the way out east, leave them there for 2 months, and bring them all the way back. Every transport, it's like $1,000 a head for every person on the bus. Every single thing the prison system does is a capitalistic game. Nothing is done out of, like, let's fix these guys. Let's help work with these guys. They shut down every mental hospital in the state of Oregon except one in Salem. And on the inside, they're giving you any pill you ask for. All you got to do is act like something is wrong with you. They're not really checking. They're not really testing. They're going to get you on that. They want you on the pills because then they have a mental control. They have a control. Pill line. They want people waiting for pill line. It's a corrupt system, and it was really, really built that way, Miss Laverne. So it'd be hard for me to really, like, I hate to down the system. Like, I hate, like, to be like a just down the, you know, down the system. And 10 Can Phone has always been built on not down in the system, but telling the truth of the system and exposing the truths of the system itself. But, like, it's job security. Even POs. Like, they know certain guys who they gonna let slide or do under the radar. I might let you mess up a little. And then they know guys where I can send him back to jail for however long, get this check, he gonna come back. And it's gonna be a ping pong effect, is what I call it, the ping pong effect. They need these guys. They keep violating these guys. They'll let you slide for a little bit until you get bad, send you back. It's job security. And then when you go back, you going back to cable TV, you going back to the homies, because everybody keep getting violated. You know, it's not a real system that, like, you know, makes you put in the work, you know, the shadow work to get better. And as Mike speak on people showing up and how we're so ecstatic and, like, about the importance of you showing up for Armand and him having somebody to be there, like, I told Mike, the reason why I'm still, like, how I am and was still showing up in my dedication was simply on the terms of him showing up. Because through the whole prison system, Ms. Laverne, I did 10 years in the prison system from 19 years old to 29 years old. And through that, it's either the people that show up, it's just the job. It's the check. You don't really find people that's showing up. And I'm talking about whole organizations and whole programs, let alone family, that's showing up. And you know that somebody show up, it'll make me feel like a failure. One, to our mom, for sure. Two, Mike broke his back, and Mike done put up so much stress, and it's been so many different elements of the words and the term showing up that I would feel like a failure not showing up and presenting my best and continuing to do the work and continuing to present the work and continuing to live in it. So, I mean, if that kind of even helps you a little bit with the understanding of the drugs and the medical and, like, how all of that work, like, I hope I kind of could give you some kind of clarity.
Yes, thank you. I know that all systems are flawed.
Yeah.
There's not a perfect system, whether it's a prison system, the medical system, the legal system, the educational system. There are flaws in all of them. But there are very positive things in all of them, too. So it's what you want, from my perspective, is that when needs to look at the very positive and take the very positive thing that you yourself as an individual can do to look at positive and keeping hope and love mm-hmm. and relationships yes. intact. And you have to start with yourself and yes. then you go on to others. But yes. I like to see more of the positive kinds of things rather than the negative. We know the negative and we know what it does. You know, I could be very bitter about all the healthcare, all the systems. I could be very, very bitter about that. And why did you take my grandson? And why mm-hmm. is this and why is that? Well, there are lots and lots of factors that go into it, a lot of factors. Yes. And if I did that, I'm not helping anyone. And I'm definitely not helping myself. You know, I think you need to look at the peace, hope, that some of the things that keep us motivated to be creatures of God.
Yeah. You got to go find that though, Ms. Laverne, because through the algorithm of social media and through the higher powers of media, they going to cover up all the positive. It's like the little people like us doing the positive work, they not going to want to show that. Oh, you know? Yeah.
But I understand that. I understand what you're saying, Crazy. But I guess it's each one of us. There are people that mm-hmm. are slowly trying mm-hmm. to work in those arenas. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. they're just as hard to move up and to make changes as it is for me and whatever little space that I have. So yeah. I guess it's just staying positive and having hope mm-hmm. and sending out love from ourselves. So, and not saying, oh, the other guy is not doing it, so why should I, for one mm-hmm. thing? I'm doing it better than you are doing it better. Well, we're not. We're all in it together in our own areas. In our own areas. You know, what you're doing is important because what you have now is a certain audience. Now, somebody else is going to have another audience. Mm-hmm. And if you get all these people in different audiences having the same
dialogue.
Well, not only dialogue, the same goals and ideals. Goals. You know, each have a good place to be.
I think that's beautiful, especially like recognizing like what you can do and how you can influence. I thought for a long time on the inside, I was like, really, I don't have any like utility or purpose. Like, how am I going to affect change or how can I positively affect the world around me? Like, maybe it's just the person that's sitting next to me. And when Quiz was talking about like showing up, it's like, that's what you did. You showed up. And I don't know if you saw Quiz's shirt. It says TA is a Trauma Almost Won brand. And he's sharing that with the world. It's beautiful.
As soon as they say trauma.
Trauma Almost Won.
Trauma's Almost Won, yes.
But it didn't win.
Right, it didn't sometimes win.
And it doesn't matter whether you've been inside in prison or whether you haven't been.
Right.
People carry that trauma and that struggle. But I think a lot of times why we see people from certain marginalized communities or people who have been formerly incarcerated dying is because there's this lack of resources. And what I mean by that is just our ability to like deal with stuff when we take a hit. Maybe we're just rolling along. I know for Armand, like heartbreak, right?
Right.
How did that lead into like a struggle with the addiction? Or maybe it's just like society going, oh, you know, Blue's, you know, no good. You know, did you know that he was incarcerated? He's no good. Or something about Queez, you know, he's too good looking, you know, like they might say that, you know? Yeah. So you just never know. And when you take those hits, like if people don't show up for you and you feel isolated and alone, so many of our friends, mm-hmm. it's been the story, right? Whether mm-hmm. it's had a little bit of secrecy in life or a little bit of struggle or a little bit of adversity, is already on top of the other struggles that people are feeling or the past struggles that come back, that trauma brings back. And I just want to share one really quick thing because I think it's salient for me, even though it's a little bit dumb because why do a metaphor right now? But there was this guy in the Major League Baseball and everybody, he was doing horrible and everybody's booing him every time from his team, from his, you know, fans. And he just kept doing horrible. And then one day they were like, you know what? We're just going to cheer this dude on when he gets up to bat. And the whole crowd started cheering for this guy and he started hitting the ball. Like, yes. And he became one of their best hitters. It's like, do we not know that? Like, do we not know that if you just say, I'm going to stand with you or I'm going to be the person who has your back, or I'm going to come and try to help, even if it's just help by showing up, even if it's not something more deep and profound, like that could be the answer, right? Whether it's for people who are post-carceral or just people in society that we've become so disconnected. So, you know, only social media or don't even know our neighbors or whatever. Like, I'm not trying to link us back to some sort of like utopian ideal, but
I think going back to that thought is that fact that at one point in my life, I needed to say, okay, where is my quote unquote mission? Where do I belong? What? And I got to saying, okay, it's right where you are. It's my neighborhood. You know, it's my neighborhood. And then if I could branch out a little bit more, but if I don't show up, and I like that real word, don't show up. If I don't show up for my neighbor, you know, even by saying hello, and maybe they're the worst neighbor in the area, but you need to show up. And showing up is in a positive way. You don't have to solve their problems. You just have to show up by a smile, a look, a talk, and eventually you get to know somebody, and it's day to day. And we can choose where we put our energies and our time. And you, I guess it's for each individual that has, if they take it and look at where can I make the talents and the gifts that God has given me, what can I do? You know, where do I best be? Like, some of you here are producers, some of you are podcasters, some of you are artists. You know, you take your skill and all that, you're just there. And if anybody else who is listening to this is just, each one of us can do something little daily, very simple, if we want to, and we have to want to.
Yeah, this is maybe good setup, because I was going to ask for final words, but that was so poetic, Laverne. So you'll have another shot, please. I just wanted to add also that, you know, just again, echoing the Mapping the Pipeline project that's going to be a part of the Policing Justice exhibition that's going to open mid-February, and Tin Can Phone's going to have a ridiculous amount of programming going on there. So that's really exciting. And something that came up earlier, you know, because it came up like, you know, you just, all of these different things about supporting and feeling supported and the baseball analogy. And, you know, that's, you know, Tin Can Phone is kind of spearheading the prison to school pipeline. So taking our context and positioning it toward young people in order to nurture them. And, you know, once again, and we'll, you know, the show is now kind of evolving to kind of work with folks like Laverne, and we're also working with Derek Clark's mother, which again, I want to echo that. Folks should really look it up, Oregonian or Oregon Live. There's some good new articles that came out just right after the lawyers submitted the suit. But the thing, a thing of several terrible things, is that, you know, Derek actually was a writer, and he was interested in working with youth, and was that guy, was going as working with youth. And so, you know, him being taken by the state is really just another reason why we don't have folks in the corner. And we don't, and that was the other thing I was going to conclude my statement was with, saying that, you know, if you have your talent, you can use it. But, you know, sometimes society makes it so hard to use your talent, and you just don't even want to. But anyway.
Man, Mike, real life, bro. Anyway, before our final thoughts, I had a question for you, Miss Laverne. When our mom was incarcerated, was there a time, or even now, do you have family, friends, or just associates, or people that's like, you know, that's in your circle that you deal with, that you had to explain that to them, or that you felt? I think the question is, how did you deal with the worries and the questions of the family, friends, and the people around you when it came to that? And I asked you that because when you speak about doing the work, that's doing the real work, because this is a thing that's supposed to like embarrass you, or that's supposed to like, you know, make, it's like a bad thing, like your grandson's, you know. But how did you deal with that, if you had to come across it, and what feelings did that invoke in you?
Yes, I had to deal with it. I've dealt with many things like this in my life, and I had come to the conclusion that truth is important. Mm-hmm. Lies or cover up is not. And a lot of people don't necessarily agree with me, but I do. I guess I have a faith that's strong enough that I know that my God is there for me. And I also know that truth always wins out. Covering up things never works. And so there were times that I debated whether I should say anything, that my grandson was having issues or whatever. And even my own family didn't always agree with me, and that I believed more in truth. You know, all of us are human beings and all of us make mistakes. Some of them are bigger mistakes than others, but none of us are perfect. And so I don't know where that's, I only know that that strength came from the God above for me. And yes, it could be difficult. And yes, there's prejudice. You know, I had to deal with family members that, and friends that, you know, didn't want to hear that. And knowing that they're probably judging me, okay, you just go ahead and judge me. This is life. You know, this is life. And you just, if you judge me, I know who I am. And I know, and I'm not perfect either. And so I guess I live with that hope and that peace. And for me, that's solid. Again, I'm not, but I think all the things together we've talked about kind of go together. Yes. And yes, people, you know, there are many families who did not want to talk about their grandson or their son or their daughter or their husband or their wife or whatever, you know, because again, it comes back to biases and prejudice and all kinds of things. But truth really is truth.
Yeah. I guess my final thing, did you want to respond, Quiz?
No, go ahead, Blue. I'll do my final thought.
You know that just hearing you talk, Laverne, and knowing that you come from like a faith perspective and that idea of that we're not meant to have a spirit of fear, right? No. And I think that that's something that if I could say one thing that encompasses all of this is that if we as people can come out of prison and try to live outside of fear, and if people can welcome us back instead of being afraid, you know, oh, you know, this person may be dangerous or this or that, when everything's going fine, right? Like all of a sudden you just take a hit. And it's like, if we can break down some of those walls of fear between people and for ourselves, then we can, you know, maybe take care of some of these issues a little bit better.
I would agree.
Yeah. My final thoughts, man, I just say first and foremost, Miss Laverne, thank you for your strength. Thank you for having that tough skin. Thank you for living in your beliefs and believing in the way you're living. For sure. To the listeners, man, just that. Dare to be different, man. Be yourself. It's cheaper that way. I promise you. We coming into a time where it's a whole bunch of followers, man. You got to be yourself. It'll keep you safe. It'll keep you out of situations you don't want to be in, you know what I mean? Because you know you and you know what you will and won't do. You know what you do and don't want to do. Man, you could do that when you be yourself, man. Misfit Adi, you know what I'm saying? 10 can't phone. Trauma almost won.
I love it. And yeah, it kind of gave my thoughts about the topic before, but I just want to, again, thank you, Laverne. I was thinking that as I was listening to Quiz, Laverne only got 12-ish hour, 24-hour notice on an invitation to participate in the show. So even the comment I said earlier, you know, there was courage to participate and to kind of, you know, face one's own grief and to lean in order to hope for something better. So yeah, thanks again for participating. And, you know, now you know the show and you know us, and hopefully again, this is just the foundation for work to come in the future. So thanks.
I appreciate it a lot. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I know Armand would be happy.
Hey, this was our mom home, so this is a home for you. If you got some work you're doing, you got some community, something you got going on, anything you want to come, and you want to be at this 10 Can Phone event, you anything you want to do, Miss Laverne, you got my contact, you got Blue contact, you can get my contact. This was his home. This is a home for you. I promise you that.
And likewise. Yes, ma'am. And likewise, yes, ma'am. For all of you, everyone.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Tin Can Phone podcast here at KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Listen every single first Tuesday of every month at 10 a.m. or you can stream this at kboo.fm/tincanphone. Tune in at kboo.fm or 90.7 FM for more show.
Hey, yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO. Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory. What makes a good story? There are laws of narrative, and you break them at your risk. Stories thrive in place, in sound, in emotional feeling and response. They are also without limit. It was a dark and stormy night, and that phrase could introduce a tale from anywhere, anytime. I can remember a teacher who enabled me. "Don't write the assignment," he said. "Tell me a story." The power there demands a certain responsibility. You can change a mind, inspire a nightmare, invoke a love, drive a hate, provoke a self-realization, start a war, set an idea free. Storytelling is not to be undertaken lightly. There is a threat to storytelling abroad. The phrase has been taken up by the working jargon of our time, co-opted by advertising agencies and fundraisers. Make the sale. Tell them a good story. It drives me crazy. The ocean begets stories the way it births winds and waves and connections. Stories of adventure at sea, sailors' songs, accounts of battle, of encounter with people from another distant place, or plants and animals discovered, described, and captured in watercolor as ephemeral illustration of unimaginable things. Read the captain's log, the love letters home, pages stained with tears, spray, smudged corrections, and the stamped images of captured whales. Stories are frames, experienced in gilded bindings, epiphanies and metaphors like glinting shards of insight and meaning. We read stories to put our babies to sleep. We turn our children into pirates. We entertain or bore our friends with endless anecdote of the most strident wind encountered or the evanescent fish that got away. Every time I'm at or on the ocean, I hear voices, my own and others, who are telling stories like those hypno-mermaids enticing sailors from their proper course. What are they saying? Are these lost memories made real but unattributed? Who are these people, and why don't they just come out and say it? If you listen to the ocean, you will take up the rhythm of a narrative, the sound of surprising melody in the background, and then the smells of salt and seaweed that is all scent conjoined, the feel of fear or exultation on your skin, the combination invasion of the senses that all good stories inspire. What a great feeling to live in a great story. I once wrote a preemptive fable about a wise man who sat on the beach every day confronting the ocean, and the stories he told first only to himself and then to disciples and others who flocked to hear his wisdom. One day, for no apparent reason, he stopped. Just stopped the telling. There was shock abroad, there was silence, then confusion, then dismay, as so many of his dependent listeners became lost in the absence of narrative as instruction. The press took notice, but not for long, and quickly the crowds abated and the man was left alone, silent, staring out to sea. One day a group of children came running down the beach, terrorizing the plovers, leaping through the surf. They found the man just sitting there like gnarled driftwood, petrified and mute. They encircled him, first mocked him, then studied him, then discussed what to do. They lifted him up from his seat in the sand and turned him three times around, and then sat him down again, cross-legged, in his same place, with its same view. And then, all at once, he began again the stories, his lively tales of sea creatures, stowaways, ragged men lost on those islands with a single palm and no rescue on the horizon. The children were delighted. They danced away, as children do, and left the man to his tall tales and endless chapters. Is there a moral to be told? Yes. The ocean enables infinite perception in all directions, through all weathers, an endless scape of human history and potential, the past and present, there in a turning horizon of human ideas and endeavors. The ocean contains the story of civilization, and each of us is that wise man whose perspective can shift as reinvention, as a refreshed orientation and engagement with a future newly imagined, then realized through the oceanic fecundity and creative and telling of our human story. We will discuss these things and more in future editions of World Ocean Radio.
World Ocean Radio is distributed by the Public Radio Exchange and the Pacifica Network. for use by college and community radio stations worldwide. Find us wherever you listen to podcasts and at worldoceanobservatory.org, where the full catalog of World Ocean Radio episodes is searchable by theme.
Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being